Off the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back a little more than 10 in to hour three and down to Houston. We go to check in with Nick Tamaro, and it's been a bit of an odyssey for Nick and family dealing, as everybody that has had to deal in one way or another with the electrical and water issues through this circumstance. Nick, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I'll let you know before we talk about it. I did not get the text message inviting me to Cancun, so that would have been really nice. But this did not happen. We're going to find our way through it no matter what.
I appreciate the reference. Fairly remarkable set of circumstances. Speaking of responsible Texan politicians, I see that Ann Richards, the late wonderful Ann Richards, is trending on Twitter for reasons I'm sure everybody can understand. Nick, give everybody an update. You know, we had Mattress Mac join us, and even Mac with one of the satellite stores, they got hit with water damage and flooding. So only the flagship store able to provide relief and warmth and food for people. Explain what it's been like.
Yeah, I mean, I think before you get into the specifics on how something like this happens, I think it's important to let everybody know that, I mean, this weather is beyond unprecedented for us. There are winters where we have one or two nights where the temperature is below freezing. We had two consecutive days where we didn't get above 28 degrees. So, I mean, you're talking about an extremely taxing system on everything involving infrastructure, obviously. And so, pipes are not situated and are not insulated to withstand that kind of prolonged period of low temperatures here as they are in places like the Northeast or the Midwest. So that became a major problem. And then, Texas's defiance, and I'm not necessarily saying it is a bad thing, but some of the energy related policies led to us having an issue with the Electricity Reliability Council, and so that's what led to the power outages. But the main source of it, of course, and the source was the low temperatures and bad weather, and it wasn't isolated in the sense that 254 counties were affected, and that's what got everybody to this point. I think the sort of insult to injury occurrence was the water shortage that hit everybody really hard Tuesday into Wednesday. That's getting better in the Houston area at the moment. I know it's not quite there in Austin. I was actually just watching a family get interviewed on CNN, and they were talking about she still had a water shortage in Austin. So I think they're probably a day away or so. But yeah, it's been very challenging. I mean, Mattress Mac can't, for those of us that, of course, are involved in racing, Mattress Mac cannot be lauded enough for what he does to step up. And that's a great snapshot for everybody about why Mac is so beloved. And he's been doing these kind of things for Houstonians forever. And for somebody who's an adopted Houstonian, he's been a godsend in every kind of situation where anybody was in need, and opening up his store for people to stay. I think he had 800 people stay there the other night. Of course, that number's gone down, thankfully, as time's gone by, and he did have a satellite store have some water damage, which is going to be, a big, big problem. But, I mean, we're talking about a city of over 3 million residents, and our main grocery store chain is only open from 10 to 5 today. So it's still a major, major issue. Obviously, there's a huge supply chain problem with water and food. And, it's easy to look back and say, boy, you could have been prepared. You knew the weather was coming. But as of Sunday, the forecast on Tuesday was for the high temperature to be almost 40 degrees, which would have meant that this whole thing would have been over. In fact, we talked on Monday, and I said that it looked like Tuesday everything would start to melt, and we'd go from there. But the problem is Tuesday it never got to 30. And then Wednesday it barely got into the 30s. So yeah, we're starting to get around a little bit better now, but it's been quite a few days.
Do you have, when you mention the grocery chain, the H-E-B, you got H-E Butts in Houston?
H-E-B is our number one grocer. Yeah, they've taken over. They came into the Houston area in earnest probably about 12 years ago, and they supplanted Randall's, which was the longtime grocery leader that got purchased by Safeway about a little over 20 years ago. So, yeah, it's basically H-E-B and Kroger for us are the main two retailers.
Well, H-E-B is, H-E-B is sort of the Wegmans of the Southeast. I mean, they're a tremendous chain. H-E-B, nice. Well,
oh yeah, they're beloved. Yeah, you want to talk about universally beloved in Texas too? The only major market they're not in really in full force yet is Dallas. But once they get in, they'll take over without question. They're the best.
They're from San Antonio originally. H-E-B, the chain I worked with years ago when I was doing private label. I was director of marketing for a big private label outfit.
And H.E. Butts himself opted to call it H-E-B rather than Butts, which was probably the right move, but it is very, very catchy and works very well.
I didn't realize that they abbreviated it down to just H-E-B,
know it down here as just H-E-B. Yeah, it's pretty funny. Well, yeah, and they developed another concept that I'll eventually get you down to Houston. Now that we're building the house, we have plenty of room for you to stay. But they've developed another concept called Central Market, which is basically a high-end, more Epicurean-style market, right? And so that's very, very good. I actually went there yesterday, and they had some power issues along the way, but they were getting back up and running, and they're looking good.
Well, I'm glad you're home and everybody is safe. And you said your folks were able; they didn't have water, but they had electricity, so they got through okay. And we just hope everybody can get an semblance of normal as soon as possible. One of the things that'll help everybody feel normal is horseplay and handicapping. And I got to tell you, Nick, I went through that Aqueduct Pick 5 tomorrow. This is a daunting sequence. It doesn't mean that you're going to have every favorite beaten, but I thought there were some races in here that were just maniacal.
Yeah, it's really tricky. It's a very, very good sequence. The fifth is a super competitive maiden race, and it's part of the cross country Pick 5, and then you've got that. The Stake is a really, really interesting race, and I think the Matty May, which we'll talk about, I guess, in the course of the cross-country Pick 5, but you could go four or five different ways in there and still maybe lack a bit of confidence. So, yeah, it's a good slate. And, this time of year, the cancellation yesterday actually helps. So, you'd like to see racing happen, but it always refreshes the horse population a little bit. And it'll lead to some competitive fields getting into March when we narrow down to 3 days. And then, I think things start to look better as the month goes on.
Let's dive in and let's do the Aqueduct Pick 5. And then we'll look at those two, the races at Tampa. Tough to look at those confidently, but let's try to get people through the Aqueduct Pick 5 before we even think about folding in those two races from Tampa. And it starts with a maiden special going the flat mile, and this at least I thought you could maybe zero in on a couple of clear favorites, but there's also a couple of options, including a firster, that are kind of, maybe B-minus C-plus types.
Yeah, I think you could probably feel confident in just using Willie Sutton and Lemon Drop Road as A's.
Mm-hmm.
On the topic of Willie Sutton, this is a horse that got purchased for $1 million, debuted just 2 weeks ago, and not even 2 weeks, so actually 12 days ago. And so you're almost wondering if Jonathan Thomas was using that as a workout, I guess maybe a series of workouts. And so the funny thing about going into that race was that you kind of felt like nepotism was entered so that the race would go for Willie Sutton. And I'm almost wondering if Willie Sutton was entered so that the race would go for nepotism. And as it ended up, the winner Atlantic Road came from Todd Pletcher's barn, rode a very strong inside that that existed throughout that card. And Willie Sutton actually spent an appreciable amount of time on the rail, so he really didn't run very well. Don't be seduced by those second time start stats at the bottom of the running lines for Willie Sutton. With second time starters in maiden special weight races stretching out on the dirt, Jonathan Thomas is 0-6 over the last 5 years. He's just 18%. With second-time starters in maiden special weight races on dirt. Those figures, those stats, as many of Thomas's are augmented by turf and also horses that have just run against drastically weaker competition at places like Tampa and Turfway, Mammoth, et cetera, et cetera. Lemon Drop rode the horse to beat. If you go back and watch the debut, he was drawn outside, and when you watch the pan, you can kind of see Pablo Morales struggling a little bit around the turn to keep him in, and then watching the head-on, he was definitely getting out. He had to flag him a couple of times right-handed going around the turn, and when he leveled out, I thought he finished pretty well. He's going to get blinkers, which, you know, watching the replay, you could see was pretty obvious. So I imagine, historically, Jimmy Durkins has been so much better second time out than been on debut. So I think Lemon Drop Road will run quite a bit better. I Am the Law is by Mishawish, who has been an amazingly good first out producer, 20% debut winners. This horse is out of an unraced dam. He's a half to Trash Talker, who was a two-year-old winner for Dermot Magner, actually, at Aqueduct last year. So there's a little bit of win early pedigree. I tried to make either half of the entry. I'm sorry, not the Neville Henry half, but Exalted Charm, who debuted at Gulfstream. He just didn't do any running. So he didn't really break awkwardly. He just didn't have any speed. And then Joel tried to get him into a spot, and he really didn't run much. So shipping up here, I don't think there's a whole lot to, under the hood. And I think if you start with Willie Sutton and Lemon Drop Road, maybe back up with Good Culture and I Am the Law, you'll get through it. Just looking through the Aqueduct Pick 5, I mean, this 6 is an extremely tough race. People, and she'll more than likely scratch one or both of them, because Linda Rice scratches virtually every horse she enters. But she has both Tale of Silence and Laddie Liam lined up. Laddie Liam's actually entered for the second time after being scratched. This horse was purchased for an incomprehensible amount of money at the end of his two-year-old season, obviously with eyes on running him in some Maryland bred races, and now he's back 14 months later in for 32. Obviously, the optics of it are terrible, so you'd have to think that the things have gone very, very bad. Tale of Silence, of course, is her other entrant. This is a horse who's great at stake place, so you wouldn't really expect either of them to be in for 32. They both look to have issues probably with running style in terms of how this race is going to unfold. I think Super Dude will end up on the lead. It's All Relevant also has plenty of speed. We've seen Jorge Vargas Jr. ride a lot better now that he's gotten quite a bit more aggressive. I didn't really settle on anybody just yet. I thought you'd probably have to use the entry. I think you'd have to use Tale of Silence if he goes because of the class angle. And I'd be intrigued by both of the recent claims, Super Dude and the Heirloom Kitten on the outside. Both, I think, end up in barns where they can certainly show a lot of improvement. I think the single in the sequence is Eloquent Speaker, who is drawn on the outside in the seventh. And obviously keep an eye on the racetrack today. We had a pretty extreme rail bias Saturday, Sunday, and Monday of last week. I don't think that'll still be the case with the 3 days of inactivity, but you're going to want to definitely stay with that. You know, how about Tony Dutrow? We all wondered. I remember people would ask me, I would ask people, what has happened to Tony Dutrow? He barely has any horses anymore. He almost never wins. He was 4-47 in 2019 into 2020 up until Christmas. He's 4-9 since, and he's getting taking over the training of Eloquent Speaker. So obviously things are going the right way, and this is a horse who's always had ability. She looks like the main speed on paper. I mean, if she's a super freak as aggressively ridden by Trevor McCarthy, then I think she'll set up just outside of her. And I thought that she looked very, very tough. Her and Waylon Josie, to me, look like really the only win candidates. I love Shane's pretty. I actually wanted to say something interesting about More Glitter in that race. More Glitter is coming back off a layoff of greater than 365 days. This is where she's going to take money. She's 4-1 on the morning line. Todd Fletcher's 8-9 with dirt starters off 365-plus day layoffs that are favored 2-13 with everybody else. So when they come back off the bench ready, or looking like they're spotted properly, they win. And when they're not, they don't. And so I think she is going to fall into the they don't category. Speaking of Fletcher, I love Shane's Pretty Lady and the Maddie May. This is a horse who was all over a bad inside last time. That was a pretty notable bad rail. Again, everybody referenced the track trend on Naira.com, and you'll see that every winner that day came around the outside. So I think Shane's Pretty Lady was really up against it. I don't necessarily blame Eric Consell for trying to save ground, but it was just the wrong time to try and do it. So I think she's going to run much better. I think her stablemate, Vacay, is also very dangerous when hopefully getting back to what should be a dry surface. after a little bit of moisture being in it today. And then you've got horses that have run races that can easily win this, like Frost Meat and Mischief and Secret Love. Brattlehouse may end up going off one of the favorites in here. I have to let everybody know, the balance of that field is 0 for 18 collectively since that race.
Wow.
10 of those starts came in maiden claimers. Right, so that was a putrid race. And Brattlehouse did what she was supposed to do and beat the tar out of him, but no doubt that was a very, very weak field.
Interesting. There's probably a couple of words to be noted about Ray Handel's filly, too, that Irish Constitution, who, you know, other than, you know, reaching for the moon in the spinaway, has been okay, and has got plenty of speed, and I don't think an extra furlong is necessarily going to be out of reach.
Yeah, game winner on debut, no doubt about it. She set a slow pace last time riding a good inside and got caught late. She was actually entered in an allowance race and scratched about a month ago. So we'll see if, obviously we'll find out if everything is fine. In here, I think the other thing she'll have to deal with is a lot of pace pressure to the outside. It looks like all three rivals immediately to her outside are going to want to show some speed. The horse has been kind of a disappointment so far. I don't know if she's suddenly going to, the light bulb's going to go on. Teetotaler is a $500,000 filly out of Artemis Agroterra, which of course makes her a half to Chestertown, who was purchased for four times what she was. And she's just not been very good. So we'll see maybe if experience will end up doing it. This is a barn, obviously, that lets the horses go along slowly. But it is a little interesting to me that Chad Brown is willing to try a stake race just 3 weeks or so after that maiden win, when you could think that he would probably have preferred a one other than. So I wouldn't include her as anything more than a C, but I'll be interested to see how she runs.
Yeah, I was going to have to make up. A handful of lengths on some here with, you know, that's got clearer form. So Shane's Pretty Lady 8-1 for the folks at Duchess View, and I see Mandy Pope's got and Kimmel's got that. You know, Kimmel's got the pair in here. Secret Love off the Franklin Square win, and Frost Me came back with a nice debut, 3-year-old performance. So a very, very nice group going forward in the Maddie May, which gets us to a murky maiden 20 to close out the sequence.
Yeah, I mean, this is a race that Warfront Fighter is supposed to win. Unfortunately, we've said Warfront Fighter was supposed to win a few times before.
Yes.
So, but he's supposed to get the job done. You know, he's better than these horses. He's run consistently faster. Scorpion Dynasty, who he outfinished last time, is, I would say, the main threat on the inside, having that speed. It's Warfront Fighter's race to lose. I could see you. Obviously, you're going to want to use Scorpion Dynasty. You're going to want to use Kits, I would say, as well, dropping from 40 to 20 with that good outside post outside of the pace players. But you know, the good thing about the race is that even if you don't have a ton of confidence in Warfront Fighter, you probably only have to use one or two more, and that'll give you a little bit of flexibility in the tricky stake race as well as that six.
There's your Aqueduct pick 5, the two races at Tampa, and to just reference back, I'd want to give everybody the notes again. The Aqueduct races are the 5th, 7th, and 8th, 5th, 7th, and 8th, and, and actually the way Nick sees it, you might be able to craft a fairly reasonable set of multiples with those three races. And then the 8th and the 9th at Tampa, Nick, what are we doing in here?
Yeah, the 8th at Tampa, I actually don't think is terribly difficult. And Malios is the horse to beat, who's the 5-2 morning line favorite. I like the 7 Irish Major, who's 6-1. He's not going to go off 6-1. He's going to go off less than that. Comes off a good second place finish at this level. He made a big move along the inside that day. He actually raced along the inside the entire way. And it was a day, as most days are, where you wanted to be a few paths outside. And if you watch the races at Tampa on any kind of regular basis, you can always see a difference in color on the dirt down the stretch. On the rail, it's darker. As you go outside, it gets lighter. And it's obvious that it's heavier on the inside. And Alonzo Quinones tried to save ground, which was not necessarily the best idea. And so I think that worked against Irish Major. So I expect him to run better. There's a lot of speed in here. I think it'll work in his favor. Malio's comes from Gerald Bennett's barn. It's the leading barn by a mile. Stretching out with Dirt Starters at Tampa. Bennett's 28% with a 272 ROI. So plenty of reason to believe that this horse will be fine on the stretch out. He's been successful going long in the past. So, I mean, I would focus on those two. Dakota's Dude is kind of an interesting horse to me. He went off favored last time. This horse was 15-1 on the morning line. And I had absolutely no idea why he was getting that kind of money. He went to the lead and was setting a slow pace, and I thought that I had not gotten in on the inside joke. But he tired late, thankfully, and so I don't really know what to do with him here. Now third off the layoff, I guess I would include him as a backup. I don't have a great deal of confidence. Gallardo getting on Kaleidoscope Kid coming out of a race where he was somewhat pace compromised, I thought made him interesting. I'd probably use him as a backup. And then the Nightcap is a race where I would use the 4, 7, 8, 11. I think that Himmelstein and Deny are the two to beat, and 7 and 8 in different ways will offer value at relatively big prices. Pachi, the 7, is not going to be a big price. He's back on very short rest out of what came back a pretty quick race, even though they were a little bunched up down the stretch. I'm going to see how that race holds up figure-wise. But Luca Drew, the ace, who's the 8, is a second-time starter, didn't get any support on debut, understandably, in a maiden special weight race, was mainly along the inside after getting away slowly. He's back off a long layoff. Robert Raymond's actually 2 for his last 10 with Dirt Starters off long layoffs, so he's capable of having one ready. He's got to win at the meet in that category, and this horse is going to be a huge price, so there's really no reason not to throw him in on what's a gigantic class drop, and even for a $10,000 maiden claimer, this looks like a weak field.
Well, and Bobby Raymond, a clever New England institution, going back to the Suffolk days, and Rockingham and the like. So the New Englanders are smiling. I got to tell you, Nick, you added a degree of confidence for approaching this, because the Aqueduct sequence just had me flummoxed, and maybe the cross country is more approachable than the Aqueduct pick 5 by itself, but that's what I'm going to concentrate on tomorrow. The 5 races from Aqueduct and the 2 from Tampa. We'll give it a swing. And we should mention, I haven't had a chance to talk to Pete in a couple of weeks, but Nick's for In the Money. Nick is doing the Aqueduct handicapping. So, the specific opinions and all the card analysis. And is sending out the link each race day. So take advantage of that.
Yeah, I'm going to be adding video to it pretty soon. I do the videos as well for Twin Spires. For Tampa right now, actually. So these two tracks actually fit me perfectly. I mean, anybody who's been following it along, I probably should apologize. Tampa is absolutely brutal to handicap on a daily basis. But there are so many days where I have confidence in so many races, and I'm like, yeah, this was a complete mess, but it's quite a challenge. But yeah, I have the analysis there every day, a little abridged version compared to what I've done in the past, but kind of more of a focus on the top pick and a little bit of explanation there. And so, yeah, it'll be again, I'm going to add video here in the next couple of weeks as we get more towards the spring, and should be fun.
Well, and speaking of which, the spring, I see that Naira laid out the summer stakes schedule today, and the Belmont condition book went online yesterday. So even though we probably have another 4 or 5 weeks of this, there are harbingers of spring that are beginning to come forward.
There are some signs, which is a good thing, no question about it.
Nick Tamaro, everybody, and nice that things are more comfortable and improving on a daily basis for Nick and all Texans. And, Nick, I appreciate the visits this week. We got a big weekend next weekend to start getting excited about.
Yeah, absolutely. Can't wait. Certainly with Sam Houston moving the Texas Champions preview card and everything else going on. I can tell you it's 35 degrees here, which at 10:37, that's the warmest it's been in the last 6 days. So we're rocking and rolling.
Crazy. Just crazy. Thanks, Nick. I appreciate it.
Good weekend.
You too. Nick Tamaro, folks. NTAMM 1215. And you know, those videos, I'm glad that Nick mentioned, and you know, it's Twin Spires weekend preview. They're in the app, you know, they're on twinspires.com and in the handicapping menu, and you know, they're little, you know, snippets, they're, you know, short analysis. Gus is doing some for Gulfstream as well. And, you know, it's another on the spot resource, especially if you, you know, if you haven't, you know, fleshed out necessarily and didn't have, you know, your own view, or you wanted to augment your own view. And actually, Papo is going to join us, Papo Morales, here, and, very much, on that same theme with, you know, what the Form to Win product, is offering as well, you know, for that glance and that quick synopsis, that, you know, gives you a read and a, pecking order, essentially, of how the horses shape up from a speed standpoint, because you know, speed is really the measurement that Form to Win is utilizing. So I want Papo to stop in and pick a race or two for tomorrow, and you know, we're going to continue to kind of flesh out the little tools that are available, and you can, you know, when you download the Form to Win app, it's going to come with, you know, preset parameters for the analysis tool, but you can then adjust them, and we want people to, you know, play with it, and you know, you can look at the results of the last previous 2 days, and you know, and get a feel for, you know, what kinds of races that, you know, really fits from an opinion standpoint. And Papo Morales joins us from AmWager, another visit this week to discuss Form to Win. Papo, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you doing this morning?
I'm good. How's the rest of the week been since we talked Tuesday?
The roads are, at least the major highways are cleared up here. The neighborhood roads are still kind of shoddy, but 24 degrees and sunshine, so we're on the improve.
Well, it's you know, when you're talking Kentucky, and when there's, you know, when you live in an environment that, you know, just brushes by winter, it's an upheaval, and no more so than it's been this year. Let's talk a little bit about some of the features. You know, we did some introduction the other day, and I've been, you know, hinting and you know, telling people more and more, and we'll continue to do this a few times a week to help, you know, help people utilize the app. And explain how you approached it, Papo, and as you were learning and playing, particularly with the parameters. I want to focus on the analysis tool and the sliders that people can use to then, you know, get the pecking order of how Form to Win sees races.
Yeah, sure, Steve. So I think you and Nick were just talking about some of those Tampa races, so I'll pull those up really quick and tell you exactly what I do. So when you go in the app, you can just pull up the, you know, the whatever particular race you want to look for. And the first thing that I do is you'll see a little icon that shows a picture of the track, which is just going to give the race distance. It gives you a little picture of the track from Google Earth, and it gives you the current weather and wind. So just so I know what the race conditions are. So you guys, I think we're talking about the Tampa 8. So it looks like, and this is tomorrow for Saturday, looks like that race is on the dirt. It's 8.18 furlongs. So what I do is I click the analyze tab, and then there's another tab where you can apply a filter, and your filters are distance, finish position, margin, starts, track condition, and weight. So for distance, we're kind of in a tweener distance here, so I'm going to adjust my tabs to only look at races between 8 and 8.5 furlongs. And then I'll click on a track condition tab, and I'm just going to click all dirt. So I'm going to see all the past performances for all these horses from those distances on a dirt track. And the first thing that I do that's just really easy is you have several tabs that you can click. And when you click on them, it sorts them from highest to lowest. So I click on the two things that I look at are the average equal race figure. So I'll click on that, and it sorts it from highest to lowest. So it's telling me that Irish Major has had 10 starts at the distance, and he has an average FOH figure of 80. The next horse is Ethan Hunt, 10 starts, average FOH of 77, and then Dakota Dude, average FOH of 75 with 10 starts. So that just kind of gives me an idea. And that's, I mean, the average FOH figure, I mean, it's okay in terms of what I think is, you know, finding the most likely winner. But the tool on this that I particularly like is what we call the form to win time. And that's a time that we've developed an algorithm that extrapolates a horse's time based on where they finished in each particular race. So we give them a certain speed figure. So if I sort them by average equivalence figure, the top horse is the number 7, Irish Major, followed by Dakota Dude, and then Tip Sheet. So those are the three horses that I'm particularly interested in, just going purely raw off speed. And then for a cheap race like this, for this claiming race, I'll click on the comparator tab, and then there's another tab that says finish position, and then I pack it. So now I can see every horse, all the horses' TP stacked together on one screen. And I always look, especially for these cheap races, I always look for the last time out highest figure. And so in this particular race, it's the number 7, who ran a 78 last time out. So those are the horses that I would, you know, keep a focus on. And this is before I've actually done any sort of my own handicapping, actually going through the TPs and watching race replays. But I would be interested in the 7, the 3, and the 10. And really, I spent, you know, less than a minute doing that. I don't know who Nick landed on, but those are the horses that I would have an interest in. Just going off, you know, really quick 2 minutes of handicapping.
And that's what this thing is remarkable at doing. Irish Major was the horse that Nick really kind of, even though Malios is going to be the, you know, the favorite, Irish Major, and he also talked about Dakota Dude too. So the three is involved, but he has Irish Major as a major alternate. How long, Popo, did it take you? I mean, I still am working my way into that kind of movement from page to page, and adjusting and you know, looking at a couple of different, you know, screens, and it's easy to do. I mean, in terms of playing around and going from those, you know, from the analyze page and setting those parameters, and, you know, then moving, you know, to the comparison. How long did it take you to, you know, to feel, you know, like you understood, you know, the layout and you know, the ability to move from screen to screen?
It really didn't take me that long. I will say this, you kind of, just being the sort of traditional handicapper, it's just a different way of looking at things. And I think you have to be open to that. And I think that's the biggest, you know, hurdle for some people to get over. They look at it and they're like, oh, well, no, I just want the regular PPs, which is fine. You know, everybody has a different style. But if you definitely want something that's relatively quick and gives you a good idea, I mean, this has it definitely has a mark. So it doesn't take that long. I just say that you do, the value in the app is definitely in the filters, applying the filters based on race distance. You know, so it's kind of custom sort for each particular race that you're looking for, and that's where you can derive the most value using the app.
We'll obviously have to, you know, kind of walk through this more than once, and we'll, you know, we'll start to focus on target races that people can follow along, and we'll do screen captures and. You know, give everybody diagram essentially of what they're, you know, what they're looking for and what they're looking at the formtowin.com. At the website, there is you know, a multi-screen walkthrough explaining all of the features. And, you know, like any product along these lines, you end up kind of gravitating toward, you know, certain things, that probably the things that, that you understand, you know, the quickest. And then, of course, the ones, once you get accomplished at it, you know, the ones that that work the best for you and seem to point you to, you know, the most winners, essentially, or the most exciting part about it is the identification of horses that seem outclassed, you know, and, you know, for those that are certainly a user of anything like a Thoragraph, for instance, you know, Jerry Brown for years has tried to convince people there's no such thing really, anymore as class, that, you know, the key to, you know, finding prices is seeing a horse that is being undervalued by the public a lot of times, Papo, because there's a class perception that a horse, you know, doesn't fit on that standard, when in fact they're under this particular occasion on the track as it is and against these horses, they are fast enough to win and or to run well and basically make your play, because they're going to be priced as a tremendous value. And that's the part of this. A lot of times when I do the hit the analyze button and I see a horse that I say, how – I say to myself, this horse can't possibly, and then I have to sit and watch as the horse then runs well. And it, so being able to get to that point with this is probably everybody, should be everybody's goal.
Yeah, it's exciting, Stephen. I would say for the everyday handicappers, do your normal handicapping, you know, using your replays and your PPs and, you know, trip notes, whatever you use, and then pull up the app and fold that in to kind of, it gives you, I think it gives you a better idea of where, you know, how to figure out the app, what exactly that you're looking for. Of course, I mean, I could give, and this may be put in the app, I could basically give my criteria for, you know, every race, the exact same filters that I use, and I could give that to somebody and they would do fairly well. Yesterday, just blank, you know, spending 2 minutes per race on Gulfstream, I showed a profit on the day. Just, and that was the 2 minutes on every race. So it does have value in terms of, you just got to, you basically just have to utilize the filters and use the data that's presented to you.
Go back. Let's go back to the filters. We talked about the eighth at Tampa. When you make your adjustments, you said in this particular case with a mile and 40 yards that you're keeping a tight parameter of 8 furlongs to 8.5. What's your feel on how wide people should, you know, should go in terms of the distance? Like, for instance, when I'm looking at the sprints, I'm actually doing 6 to 8. I should tighten it up a little bit.
Yeah, you could probably tighten it up. When I'm looking at sprints, 6 furlongs, I go 6 to 6.5. If it's 5.5, if it's a 5.5 furlong turf sprint, for example, I'll use a full furlong. I'll go 5 to 6 furlongs. But usually I'm within a half a furlong percentile when I'm analyzing these races.
So you keep it tight.
Correct. Like, so there's something, like, if you play every day, you know that Gulfstream plays the speed. So maybe an 8 furlong race, I'll look at horses that have been running at 7. And that's just an adjustment that I make, just knowing that horse tends to play to poorly placed horses. So some of that, you know, you'll just use intuitively, just for playing the races every day.
And Dave Grenick is going to join us here to end the show momentarily. Let's look at that ninth race too. Might as well at Tampa, because that is a 6 furlong race. The problem we may run into, and this is, you know, one little chink in the armor. You know, the unraced horses, you really are going to have to kind of, you know, utilize your old fashioned understanding. But what does it say about this maiden 10 in the ninth?
So this one's going 6, so I will adjust it for only looking at horses around between 6 and 6.5, all dirt, average, equibase. I would like the 4, Himmelstein, the 11, Denai is kind of interesting. And then on the form to win title, the number 4, Himmelstein, he's a dual qualifier. So that means that he's in the top 3 on average speed figure and also average form to win speed. So I think he's a must use. Of course, he's the favorite. The 11 offers some value. And then since this is made in claiming, I will look at all their speed figures and give you out who had the last one. And I think the 7's interesting because he ran a 66 last time out. So those would be the 3 horses that, you know, just spending a minute on it, who I would be interested in.
And Nick Tamaro, 4, 7, 11, he also is going to include the 8, and who we talked about, Bobby Raymond's horse that's coming back for a seasonal debut, who, you know, only made the 1 start early last year. So that's pretty funny that at an absolute glance, form to win puts you on, you know, the 3 of the, you know, and you might say, well, they're obvious players. Okay, in some cases that's going to happen, but it's 2-1, 6-1, 7-2. Papo Morales joining us. We're going to have, you know, these quick hit handicapping sessions and tutorials about form to win. Form2win.com. Go to the website. The picture of me is, my God, that needs to be shrunk. Scroll down and download it at the Apple Store or on Google Play. And actually, to Alex's credit, in building it, there is a PC version. So for those of you that, you know, that are that operate on a PC, you can download the PC version as well. There's the how-to guide, and we're going to keep walking you through and teaching you how to utilize it. It's powerful, and it's tremendous fun, and there's going to be more bells and whistles added on a very regular basis. So join us and get involved, and we'll learn it and use it together. Papo, good luck this weekend.
Hey, thank you, Steve. You have a great weekend, and you stay safe.
We'll talk next week. Papo Morales, everybody, who, of course, you know from Amwager, Papo Core 1. You should be following Papo, who is really one of the industry's nicest people. Let's get Dave Grenigan here. We got about 4 or 5 minutes to close out the morning because, as I mentioned in passing, because I saw the email hit my desk, my phone, the summer stakes schedule, and there is it a bombshell, Dave?
I guess sort of. I mean, to me, it's one of those deals where if it's not broken, you don't have to break it, and I thought, but I guess it must be broken because the Jockey Club Gold Cup is now going to be run at Saratoga, and there was the Flower Bowl. Just looking, I did a little bit of work last night. I kind of had an inkling about this, and the Jockey Club Gold Cup over the last 6 years, the average field size has been 6. The Woodward, the average field size has been 8, including a 14-horse field in 2018. I think it's a reaction. I did talk before I spoke with you. I talked to Martin Panza, the senior VP of racing operations here. He said, look, a lot of horsemen want the more time between races, between their last race and the Breeders' Cup. So now if you run in the Woodward, I'm sorry, if you run in the Jockey Club Gold Cup, you have 8 weeks to the Breeders' Cup. I know 2 years ago, Vino Rosso came out of the Jockey Club and won the Classic. Last year, Tacitus, I think, came out of a third place finish in the Jockey Club Gold Cup and ran fourth in the Classic. I just guess it's placating to the sort of the new way that trainers are training and want all this time between races.
Well, and
the Flower Bowl. The Flower Bowl is a little bit less for me. I'm not sure I quite get the Flower Bowl move, but I think the Flower Bowl is a race that people do want to run in. And I remember when Sister Charlie, I know she won the Breeders' Cup a couple of years ago, Billy Mare Turf, skipping the Flower Bowl, but she wasn't planning to skip the Flower Bowl. She was looking to, and maybe if there's no Beverly D, I don't know what Chicago's situation is. If there's no Beverly D, then maybe a race like this might attract some of those types of horses.
Well, 600,000 for the 1 3/8, and the Jockey Club Gold Cup, $1 million, moves to Saturday of closing weekend of Saratoga. And of course, you know, the 1 1/4 configuration at Saratoga, much more accommodating actually than the dogleg situation down at Belmont. And I got to say one thing about this. And granted, one of the most memorable Woodwards in history ended up being run at Saratoga. To me, the Woodward never was appropriate at Saratoga. It meant to be at Belmont, and I kind of like it being returned to Belmont Park.
Well, there's no reason to have three of these races. I mean, unless we're going to go to 60 days, there's no reason to have three older male turf dirt stakes at Saratoga. So, look, I think the Woodward and the Jockey Club both belong at Belmont Park, and I'm sure I'll adjust the fact that the Jockey Club is run at Saratoga. And, you know, I hate the saying, but it is what it is. We'll see how it goes. I'm sure it'll garner good participation. I mean, you have the Whitney at the beginning of the meet, the Woodward or the Jockey Club Gold Cup, whichever one you wanted to have. Now it's the Jockey Club Gold Cup at the end of the meet. I do agree with you that the mile and a quarter off that dog leg is not the most aesthetically pleasing race, and the Woodward will return to a mile and eighth. I did confirm that. So whenever he puts it on, it'll probably be in the same spot as the Jockey Club Gold Cup was late September, early October, but it will return to the mile and eighth. But look, now you have 20 with the addition of the Flower Bowl and the anointment of the Saratoga Derby as a Grade One. You have 18 flat Grade One stakes now at Saratoga in 40 days, plus the two steeplechase races. So 20 Grade Ones in 40 days of racing at Saratoga.
Well, and with fingers crossed for attendance to some degree, and maybe by September to a fairly complete degree. The other part of this that makes a lot of sense, the concern that the mile and a quarter ahead of the mile and a quarter, not that it hasn't been accomplished, but by having the mile and the eighth as the prep next step toward the Breeders' Cup Classic, there's some real benefit, I think, to that. And I think this is going to end up paying off. I kind of like it.
Okay. I'm not so sure I agree. I mean, I think a lot of horsemen baby their horses too much, and you know, that's another topic for another day. But if you have a horse of that level, you can run a mile and a quarter 5 weeks out from the Breeders' Cup and still have a horse to run it on the mile and a quarter. And like I said, it was only 2 years ago that Vino Rosso ran a very good race, whether you just want to say he finished first, he got disqualified, whatever. He ran a very good mile and a quarter at Belmont Park and came back 5 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever it was later, and won the Classic in his career best performance. So I think it's really an individual case-by-case basis, and you can make a case for either way that it works out right. Belmont
Falling
now is, what, 28 days? So,
it's
like, you know, don't blink or you'll miss
this. Yeah, exactly. It's true. Well, the most notably, of course, Saturday, August 28th for Travers, and the beginning of the meet, of course, the Whitney, first Saturday, August 7th, and looking forward down the road this summer. And Dave, we'll talk again ahead of Gotham Day.
Sounds good. This might have been the first time I actually spoke to you with actual snow in front of me on the ground here. We'll make some headway.
DRF Greenwich, everybody, and watch for Dave tomorrow with that terrific aqueduct sequence with the Maddie May. And I may see Dave. I may see you sooner than later, actually. We're going to send you out into the weekend. Thanks to Chris Katulak, Fonner Park, Hammer, and Ron Anderson, Johnny V, Briv, Scully, Nick Tamaro, Papo Morales, and KC on the board. Talk to you Monday.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.